comes the sun, and I say it's alright.
Welcome to IPOS On Air with Noah Mee. Join us every Friday night at 7 p.m. only on Double Radio 92.7 FM. And welcome back to another show. I would like to introduce Emily Miller, or as I know, Miss Miller. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Sure. Hi, Noemi. Thanks for having me. My name's Emily Miller, and I am a teacher in MMSD, specifically West High, where I currently teach social studies. And I've been there, goodness, 21 years.
Well, it's great having you on the show. I know I see you in class for the last semester of my senior year. And I also saw you on Wednesday, too, which was great. I don't know if you kind of want to talk about where we were.
Sure. It was a wonderful opportunity to kind of extend this school year beyond the four walls of West High. Noemi and her group organized a visit to a farm, which
Janet Faust
Farm in Jefferson County, and it's significant because it's right next door to a CAFO, and Janet's group. Oh my gosh, I'm forgetting the name of her group, her organization. Do you remember what they're called? I know I'm forgetting, but their organization is trying to basically educate the community, the greater community of Jefferson County, as well as Wisconsin, the state, about the implications of CAFOs and what they're doing to our drinking water, to the land. Specifically, she lives next to a cattle, a dairy CAFO, but her outreach group is working with people who are advocating to educate about chicken CAFOs as well.
And there's a number of CAFOs in Jefferson County alone, and in Wisconsin alone, there's 321 CAFOs in the state of Wisconsin, which is quite alarming, seeing the impact of just that one CAFO and seeing the impact of all of that. Just the magnitude of all the different issues that are intersected with that specific CAFO, whether that's with the air pollution, long-term health conditions, the water quality. There's a lot of issues that are intersected.
Yeah. Specifically, do you want to say what the CAFO stands for?
Yeah, so CAFO does stand for Concentrated Animal Feeding Operations, which is similar to kind of like the definition of a factory farm. And
I think the requirements were to qualify as a CAFO, you have to have over 1,000 animal units.
So that doesn't necessarily mean an animal by itself, since there are younger animals.
It goes by the size.
Yeah.
So for cattle, it's actually fewer than 1,000 head would qualify as a CAFO, but for chicken, smaller mammals, it would be a larger number that qualifies that unit. But what was so alarming about this place that we visited, or we didn't actually go on the CAFO, but we went around it, was that on 44 acres of land, they've got 3,000 head of cattle.
Yeah.
And the lagoon itself, which disposes of the animal waste, the manure, was 4.4 acres large.
Yeah.
And which is huge, just huge. If you remind me, Noemi, I think that in terms of the disposal for the manure, 10% of what's disposed or can 10%. Oh, gosh, I wish I had my notes with me. 10%, there can be allowed leaching out the lagoon pits of 10%.
The amount of waste that can be in this area, it's considered to be diluted.
Right.
Except that it does have such a major impact on the land and the area around it. I think another thing that we were learning is how the waste is managed or not managed. And that the waste quite literally has to be taken out two times per year, the liquid manure
to clean it out
has
right.
to be pumped out of the kind of vats that it's in and removed. And I think that they said that it that there were 39 times per hour for these two periods of the year that they were removing this in truckfuls
over a 2-week period.
Yeah.
And that was just for the cleaning. I mean, it's mm-hmm. constantly being piped out, but
right.
that was the main.
Yeah.
Which is just monumental.
Yeah. And so when we were on this field trip, we had one student from Memorial, two of our independent study students, and then myself and Ms. Miller as well. And so I guess, what do you think of kind of like the impact on those students and kind of the impact on education, having these opportunities?
It was significant because as we were meeting with this group, Janet, as well as her colleagues that are also part of this organization that she's created,
mm-hmm.
Students I could see were figuring out ways that they could match their talents to the needs of the organization to help mobilize and be activists. For example, one of the students that came with us, the young woman from Memorial,
mm-hmm.
her interest is in computer programming,
mm-hmm.
and yet she's passionate about protecting the environment and social justice. And so one of the asks that Janet asked the students was that she really needed help with keeping up the website and
mm-hmm.
The data collection and inputting the data and making the website more user-friendly. And this particular student readily volunteered to help her with that. So mm-hmm. It was wonderful because on the drive up to the farm, this student was trying to brainstorm with me as we were driving how she could use her programming skills
mm-hmm.
to help the environment. And I said, my goodness, any environmental organization needs data analysis and needs programmers. And so it was just really satisfying to see that connection take place.
Mm-hmm.
And I just think field trips like this are just so wonderful because students can see how the skills they're learning in school can be applied in the real world
mm-hmm.
for things that they feel passionate about. So it was really beautiful to see.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. I think also just kind of looking at the way that kind of how people solve climate change and this idea that, you know, like you have to be kind of like a climate scientist or you have to do this really doesn't apply in the real world because you have all of these different talents coming to this and you can really take an environmental stance, whatever opportunity you choose or whatever career path you choose,
yeah.
Which I think was really obvious there as well.
Absolutely. One of the other asks that Janet had was she'd like to organize not really a festival, but the
mm-hmm.
day, kind of just an educational outreach day.
Yeah.
And she needed help with the organizing.
Yeah.
And you don't need to be a soil scientist to be able to help organize
mm-hmm.
Or to be able to help think of educational activities to make the science understandable to children and
mm-hmm.
young adults. And so I think some of the students saw how they could help with that as well.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. I think also kind of, I was just wondering too, if this was something that you see being integrated into the school day as well, or if that's something that still needs to be brought in.
Well, I would love it to. Field trips are always a little tricky,
mm-hmm.
especially during COVID. It's been hard.
Yeah.
I usually, for example, in gender studies, I usually would have a couple guest speakers in. And
mm-hmm.
this year, I just kind of dropped the ball on that because of COVID. And so
mm-hmm.
I need to get back into that. I think that in order to make, I mean, it's one thing having speakers come in, it's harder to actually take the field trips.
Mm-hmm.
And I think as a school system, we need to restructure the way we do school
mm-hmm.
so that we can make it more just easier to be able to do these kind of things.
Mm-hmm.
We just have many different demands on our instructional time, mm-hmm. Whether it be standardized testing or whatnot. And so the school day needs to be reorganized, I think, in a way so that we can have these kind of hands-on experiences in the community.
Yeah, for sure. And which classes do you teach?
Currently, I teach world history, modern U.S. history, gender studies. Mm-hmm. I'm a social studies teacher, but I've taught English and I've mm-hmm. taught different things in social studies. But I think the beauty of teaching social studies is it's very, there's a lot of intersectionality, as we were mm-hmm. saying, with science or with right. English, with so much that we could partner with different departments in the school mm-hmm. To not only create cross-sectional interdisciplinary classes mm-hmm. but to figure out ways that those interdisciplinary classes can connect directly with the community.
Yeah for sure. How long have you been at West?
21 years. Yeah
that's great. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and I've taught, holy cow, I've probably taught 25 different classes.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Because I started out in ESL, doing ESL English and History, and then I taught English and social studies. So mm-hmm. there's always a lot of room to grow in education. I think it's a falsehood when people look and go, oh, you're a teacher, you've been doing the same thing for 20 years. No year is the same. No day is the same. Even if you're teaching the same class, the students always make it different. And the world makes it different because our world keeps changing. And so the beauty of especially teaching social studies is to be able to make those connections between what we're learning in class and what's going on in current events and social issues that are impacting our world today.
Yeah, for sure. Thank you so much. And
yeah,
we'll
my
be
pleasure.
Right back. Thank you.
It seems like
welcome back to IPLS on Air. This is Noemi. What is the music that we're coming in?
This is my music.
Nice.
So yeah, Memor Exorcist. The song is called Preciseless.
Nice. Thank you. We are here with Emily Miller, who was my gender studies teacher. Thank you very much for joining us. I kind of wanted to talk about gender studies and some of the ideas and how you kind of developed the ideas for the class. I'm wondering if they started out this way or if this is something that you developed over time.
Sure. Well, first of all, it's a real privilege to be able to teach gender studies. I haven't been teaching it very long, and it's a work in progress because the beauty of the class is that I get to learn as much from the students. Really, it's kind of an organic curriculum. I've only been teaching it, I think, 3 years now. Traditionally, the way the class was conceived, it was called Women in Society, and it was a traditional women's history course. And so it was really looking at women's history in the United States, pretty much going back to the beginning and bringing it through the different waves of feminism. And so I've tried to make it more of a gender studies course, where obviously it is still a history course, and I think it's really important to understand the roots of women's history, because mm-hmm. so often it's gleaned over in traditional history courses, and students are always delighted to be able to really delve deeper mm-hmm. into topics about women's history mm-hmm. that they just didn't learn in
yeah.
their freshman class or their sophomore class.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think my primary goal with the course is really to have students understand that, I always say that I want to pull out the story in history mm-hmm. and make students feel that story, but also see their own story and how they have agency to make change happen. Mm-hmm. So I want them to see themselves in the history, but also to realize that they can help make change happen in that history. Mm-hmm. And so how I've tried to open it up is really to, we're still looking at systems of the patriarchy mm-hmm. and seeing how really the patriarchy works as a system, but see how there's intersectionality between, for example, gender is just one form of oppression, but it's not the only form of oppression. Mm-hmm. And that feminism is really about fighting for equality and justice for all people, not just women. Mm-hmm. So we look at the experiences of non-cisgendered people, non-heterosexual people, the LGBTQ community, and we try to make it a much more expansive course.
Mm-hmm. I think it's also really interesting that you bring up the idea of going into gender specifically, because I think there's this kind of thought that gender should be a part of other parts, you know, like your other history classes. But I think it is important to have a specific class to learn about gender, because there's no possible way to be able to have that specific class within other classes.
Right, right. We often just will touch on it, right? And then it's back to the wars or whatever in those regular history classes.
Or like when we talk about, like, we also have African American studies yeah. as well, and it's hard to really do justice for both sides.
Absolutely.
Even though they are very intersectional.
Yep. And so that's the beauty, is that we can look at history through this lens of gender.
Mm-hmm.
Like you said, in African-American history, you're looking through the lens of the African-American experience. Mm-hmm. Similarly, we're really lucky at West High, we have Wisconsin First Nations. So you're looking at the Native experience. And so anytime there's an opportunity to really go in more focus, I think it makes the students feel that there's just so much more to this world
mm-hmm.
that they didn't know and that they can connect more with.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the beauty too of this course is that I've tried to design it in a way where there's a lot, and I need to keep doing this, there's opportunity for student choice. Mm-hmm. So while it's important to have a framework, like in any course, you need a framework for the general and foundational history.
Mm-hmm.
Once you understand the main threads and themes and topics, then you can let students take those in the direction they want to explore.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's been really fun for me to see. For example, we do the project with representations of gender and sexuality in art and media.
Yeah.
And I always learn so much from students because they pull us in different directions.
Mm-hmm.
And then what's really fun too is when students take what they're learning and they go outside of the course and mm-hmm. they start organizing, whether that's getting involved with the Rape Crisis Center,
mm-hmm.
Organizing sit-ins, for example. First semester this year, and I know you've had on your show Grace Borgerding to speak
yeah.
about Allies of Consent Club, mm-hmm. AOC Club, where she was inspired by discussions from the class to really go and it's also her passion
mm-hmm.
to fight for educating people about the protections that they have under Title IX
mm-hmm.
and educating people about consent and what that means.
Mm-hmm.
And this led to a school walkout, a teach-in, I would call it, really,
yeah.
where students came up and told their stories as they left class for a period, told their stories about their experiences with sexual harassment and sexual assault. And it was incredibly empowering, because when you realize that you're not the only one with that story,
mm-hmm.
that you're not isolated, that other people have experienced this,
mm-hmm.
then you can feel empowered to go and make change happen. And honestly, this is just the joy of teaching, right? The students are our future, and they give me hope. And every year, there have been students that just just run with things. Mm-hmm. We had 1 year students when I was teaching African American history. It was students in my colleague Ms. Gavelber's class, mm-hmm. who organized, lobbied the district, and organized a teach-in, a walkout, to have more teachers of color at mm-hmm. our school, and just to really bring that to the district's attention and make that a number one priority for the district. Students in prior years, the first year I taught gender studies, there was a club at school, kind of similar to your Sunshine mm-hmm. Club. It was called Get It Done Club.
Oh, yeah.
Do you remember that
yeah,
one?
I remember that.
And boy, did they get stuff done. And
they did, yeah.
The activism that they, one of their primary goals was to build bridges between different clubs at school. Mm-hmm. And they did it.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. We are coming back with our musical guests, but after that, we'll kind of talk more and keep on the more hopeful and positive note. Thanks for listening. Welcome back. We are coming in with Sisyphus by YGTM.
Yes, thank you. I'd forgotten the title there.
We are coming back with our musical guest for tonight. So Evan, do you kind of want to take control here?
Absolutely, yeah. So here we have Jerry. Now, Jerry, I have you in my phone as Jerry Beats, but I know that's not your stage name, right? So introduce yourself.
Hi, I'm Jerry. My performance name, DJ name, producer name is FU. I'm Asian.
Yeah, okay. What are you saying with that?
Basically just saying who I am, and like there's a lot of satire behind it. Once you get to know me, you'll understand why I chose FU. I'm Asian, cuz you know, I'm just repping my ethnicity and like basically just being me.
Sure, sure. I love it, man. All right. Well, what kind of music do you produce?
So I produce mainly hip hop, R&B, and basically anything really. Yeah.
All right. This is a collaboration, from what I understand. Who else worked with you on this song?
My artist Azzy Lay. He could not make it today, but yeah, this is our song we made in my apartment.
Nice.
So we're repping for Azzy Lay. The song is called Personally. You got anything else to say?
No.
Let's give it a listen. This is Personally by Azzy Lay and FU I'm Asian.
Talk about. I be up and on a different round. Wonder if the devil watching me hating now. Okay. No way. It's my place. This my game. No. Oftentimes I fall in line, but I don't really want to find the demons that chase me. Crucified upon my mind, cause they don't really want to fight the life that they hating. Yeah. Often fool around with my free time. What I'm supposed to do with the me time? Looking at the phone like I don't already know. When I'm finished, just let me hit a rewind. I've been on the roll, I'ma let it. No, you ain't never finna keep me on D-line. Blow another O, I don't need another hoe. Only need somebody who is gon' see mine. Okay, I don't wanna know. No way, what you need to know from me.
y'all know I don't need bullshit, that's for sure, okay? Okay. Alright, but wait, hold up, huh? What was I talking about?
Took me more than a minute to finally finish. Spending time in my mind to align with my life and the way that I see it, I know that I'm winning. I ain't trying to fight it no more, I've been changing this, going on the board with the way I've been hearing.
I really owe you, I really owe you. Personally, you mean that much to me. I don't give enough for me. Wanna know what love can mean. To me, to you, to we, to truth, I see, I know, we be so different. I'm trying to give it. It really seems like you don't give none at all. So where do I fall? What should I do? If you ain't giving your all.
Thank you so much. That was wonderful. Thank you for joining us tonight. Welcome back to IPOS on Air. This is Noemi. What music are we coming in on?
This is me again.
Nice. I should know that by now.
No, it's all right.
We are with Emily Miller, and I kind of wanted to talk about, like, if there have been any, like, stories that you have when you feel like you've just felt a lot of hope from your students.
Sure. I was talking a little bit about that in the last segment, and in particular, I just love when the students take ideas that we've talked about in class and run with them and make them their own and use what they've learned to just create their own activism. And mm-hmm. whether that is building bridges between diverse communities at school. I was talking about a particular club called the Get It Done Club that decided mm-hmm. that bridges needed to be built between different big clubs at school, the BSU, the Black Student Union, the Get It Done Club, which was predominantly white females, and the Familia Latina, the Latino Club.
Mm-hmm.
And they mobilized with the student council to create different projects and opportunities and mm-hmm. to build bridges. And they actually started meeting together. It was so wonderful because mm-hmm. they really started pulling the school together. Mm-hmm. And then they were also getting involved in the community and doing volunteer activities mm-hmm. together as these larger groups mm-hmm. get going into the community in ways that the students identified were needed mm-hmm. in each of their particular communities, whether that's the Latino community or the African American community. So yeah. It was really powerful.
Yeah, that's wonderful. I remember they also did the mayoral forum.
Oh, that's right.
Forum, and I remember that happening. Of course, I couldn't vote at that time, but it was wonderful to kind of see that and be able to be a part of that in a different way before you can vote. And I know during the pandemic, they also did a lot with food insecurity as
well.
Yes,
absolutely.
That's something that has been an issue, especially during the pandemic, for a lot of different communities.
And your club has been involved with that as well.
Food security. Yeah. Yeah, for sure. We do it, I think, in a different... So they were doing like a food pantry at the high school.
They created it.
Yeah. And I know that they had organized a lot with that. We're kind of doing more with the community gardens. But yeah, that's what we've been doing. But I know that also in your class, you have a lot of room for students to kind of take initiative and be able to be a part of their own education. I'm kind of thinking about, I don't know, we have the journal entries and being able kind of reflect on what they've learned over the past, whether that's from maybe a documentary that we were mm-hmm. watching or also the current events that students do as well.
Right. that is the beauty of, again, how I'm always learning from my students. The course is not set up in the traditional, you know, you'll have a 10-point multiple choice quiz at the end of this unit or whatever. Mm-hmm. It really is the main substantive summative projects. There's projects as well, these journal reflections, where students can either delve deeper into, like you said, a documentary or a reading that we did, or they can take a topic and do additional research around it. And mm-hmm. I'll always provide some introductory links or the ideas of directions they can go. But often students will take it, you included, Noemi, would take things in very different directions. And it's just, it's so fulfilling to see students be in charge of their own learning mm-hmm. and to do so much more than what I would have done. They just help build the curriculum with me. Mm-hmm. And then they'll bring it back often and teach what they've learned mm-hmm. from their journal entries. Or as you mentioned, every week we have a current event presentation and mm-hmm. students present on a current event, whether that be, for example, as we await for the Supreme Court decision on the Dobbs case. Mm-hmm. Regarding abortion and reproductive choice rights for women. That was one example of a current event that students did research on.
Yeah.
But they were diverse, and I'm not thinking of any off the top of my head right now.
But
connecting, for example, environmental justice to mm-hmm. Gender issues and just the gamut of things.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
and I think also kind of seeing, I know obviously teachers have a lot of knowledge from being able to teach for that long, but when you have 30 people in a classroom, you have so many other minds that are able to bring in their own stories.
That's right.
And I think that's part of also bringing in the story part of history as well.
That's right.
And being able to, not only as a teacher who teaches what they know, but also being able to facilitate knowledge throughout the classroom.
That's right. Learning is collaborative. Learning knowledge is constructive.
Mm-hmm.
And so even when I'm planning different activities to process a particular article or whatnot, I try to do it in a way that involves discussion and opportunity for students to bring in their own background knowledge, or to be able to take process the new knowledge and take it in an even new direction or new alley.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like you say, yeah, knowledge is, it's discursive. It's mm-hmm. it's based on learning from each other.
Mm-hmm. And I think also, I was also wondering kind of, because it was, yeah, it was, of course it was, during the second semester of senior year during gender studies, when the, I just remember seeing like all of the articles about the potential for Roe v. Wade to be overturned. And I'm wondering kind of as a teacher how you went about teaching that the next day.
Yeah, that that's the thing about being a social studies teacher. You really have to be responsive to current mm-hmm. events. And so the next day following the leak of that draft Supreme Court decision, I dropped absolutely what we were going to do.
Mm-hmm.
And my colleague, Ms. Giovannis, who teaches mm-hmm. AP government, I was putting together something, but she had put together this beautiful lesson that allowed students to really explore mm-hmm. the intricacies of that draft decision. And so I just let students explore that, and then mm-hmm. we talked about it. And I also tried to provide a bit more, because we hadn't in our curriculum yet, we weren't at the point really where
right.
we delve into the history of Roe v. Wade and reproductive choice mm-hmm. in this country. And so I tried to provide that
historical background
before you guys, we leapt into processing the draft decision. Mm-hmm. So you had a framework.
But
that you have to do that with social studies. I mean, I remember, what was it, last year, January 6th,
mm-hmm.
January 7th was probably the hardest day of my teaching career.
Mm-hmm.
And our whole department was staying up late thinking about how are we going to teach about what just happened, but not be didactic, but let students process what just happened to our nation's capital and to our country, in a way that gave students the opportunity to voice their concerns and voice their questions in a respectful manner, but learn from each other and feel that school is about what we're learning is relevant to their own lives.
Yeah. I know, looking at kind of the presentation that Ms. Giovanni or Giovannis had created, as an AP Gov student, being able to see that presentation, but then in fourth hour, but then also seeing it 2 hours later in seventh hour was really interesting, because in government and politics, you kind of take the political route of what is, you know, what do the different Supreme Court justices, what is their take on this? Are they being originalist? What does that mean?
Right.
What is going to really happen? And then looking at that from a gender standpoint later in the day and seeing how this is going to affect, and also looking at the history of the movements behind it. Is this going to awaken another wave of feminism?
That's right.
And I think that was one of the questions that we had brought up as well.
Exactly. Oh, I'm really, that makes me happy to hear you say that, because I was worried. I knew I had some AP Gov students in there, but you're right. We did look at it through a different lens. And so that opened up a different discussion.
And I think it's so important to do that too with these current issues as well.
Absolutely.
I'm wondering, kind of with the shooting in Buffalo and the shooting in Texas. How do you as a teacher process that personally, but also in the classroom? And I don't know if there's necessarily a good answer for that, but I'm just wondering.
Yeah, you know, I think we have to acknowledge it. The day after, I guess it wasn't the day after, but Monday or whenever we went back to school after the Buffalo shooting, my first classes are world history and then modern U.S. And I just very directly brought it up, and wanted to reassure the students that the teachers and the school's priority is to make our school a safe place. And so obviously as a teacher, I want my students to feel safe, because I know that if students don't feel safe, learning can't happen. But we also have to acknowledge, and especially with the Buffalo incident, you know, why are these mass shootings happening?
Right.
What do we need to change in our society? And let the students wrestle with this. It's not for me to preach to them, but it's for them to ask the questions themselves. Nonetheless, I did have to bring up, because many of my sophomores were not aware of something called the white replacement theory. That was a motivation behind this particular, the Buffalo shooting. And so I tried to build in that background knowledge of what his motivations were, and plug that into the whole narrative that we're learning in modern U.S. history and world history, as we were in world history, we were in our fascism unit with World War II. And so how does that connect to what we're studying, and how do we see examples of fascism today in our own society? So building on those connections so that, again, history is relevant. But you can't ignore these things, because students know when you're ignoring things and sweeping things under a rug. They want you to be honest and real. I don't even think I could. You just have to acknowledge it. And you have to acknowledge students' feelings. And luckily, MMSD does a good job of providing support. So if students need to go to student services to process these horrific events, we have a very good systems in place to help them do that. Our student support services are just wonderful. And so as a teacher, I want to bring that up to students to know that they have support. But then I also want to engage them with the political sides of things, too, and the historical roots of these kind of actions. These are not just new events, right? There's a historical foundation for these kind of horrific events. So
I think, and also kind of looking at the way that history provides the context for what our current events are.
That's right.
In specific. I also kind of want,
And I just want to say, I I never want students to just feel so overwhelmed and down. Mm-hmm. I want them to feel that there's hope, right, mm-hmm. to make the world a better place. Mm-hmm. And so, but we have to fight for it.
Right.
I'm sorry. What were you going to say?
I was just going to say, in terms of also like education and the way that students can have autonomy over their own education mm-hmm. too, and bringing that in and no understanding, not only is this going to be taught and the solutions will be taught, but being able to understand that taking that initiative is something that we are definitely going to have to do, and will happen inevitably.
And I think you are the prime example of that, if I can put you on the spot. I mean, because you are such a doer. And it would be great just for me to hear actually about how you have, with your organization, mm-hmm. made change happen. Mm-hmm. And perhaps what was your motivation? I mean, did you find your initial motivations in the classroom?
It was more just... honestly, current events, I think, yeah. in terms of like one of my friend's houses was destroyed in a flood. And so that's how we kind of got our start. I think that promise between both of us to help each other in that time, freshman year, led to us creating the two events. And of course, with the rise of the climate movement in 2019, led to what we're doing now. And we kind of just float. We don't really have a specific... We have a mission, certainly, but we do also float in a way of whatever is needed at that time, we will be there for that. And that's kind of, I mean, our mission is very it is our responsibility to take care of our community. And I think that just came out of ending. We had a speech at a state competition, and I think we just didn't have an ending. And I think that just randomly came out of my mouth at the end of the speech, and that just became our mission statement. So that's how we got the mission statement. It's our responsibility to take care of the community. And I think we do bring that into the school building. Everybody has their own personal narrative bringing that into the school building as well. I'm wondering if that's something like climate, if that's something that you find students bring to you or you try to integrate into the classroom.
Both ways. Absolutely. I think, in world history, obviously we're trying to build the whole curriculum with really the environment at the center, mm-hmm. obviously the people at the center, but also the environment, because yeah. we're not going to have any more world history if we don't have Mother Earth with us.
Right. And I think for me too, I think being able to understand the connection between climate and gender, kind of for the first time within your class, was really important. And I think I'm just incredibly grateful to have had Aww. You as a teacher and to kind of recognize that and be able to, I don't know, bring that into the classroom, but also being able to see all of the other projects that the students had done, because I know that definitely came from something that was really important to them as well.
Yeah. I think, are you speaking about the wisdom of Robin Wall Kimmerer,
yeah,
and braiding sweetgrass,
yeah.
and
I've read that in at least five of my classes, but yeah. looking at it from different lenses is really interesting as well. It's a great book too.
It's a wonderful book.
It's wonderful too. We're also integrating that into our class curriculum because that's very important.
If you haven't read it, the book is called Braiding Sweetgrass by Robin Wall Kimmerer, and they just released a middle school version of the book.
We did,
for
yeah.
all ages. So,
yeah, it's a great place to end too.
Yeah.
So thank you so much
for my pleasure.
Coming
Thanks for
tonight.
Having me.
And next week, Evan is taking over the show, and I think you have a great show.
I've got some ideas. Fingers crossed, you know, it's going to be great.
Yeah. Well, for now, this was Noemi, and that is The Sauce. Thank you.